You're listening to Vatican Radio.
This is Vatican Radio. I'm Chris Ultieri. St. Mary's University Twickenham has launched a major new interdisciplinary research center named after and inspired by the ideals and intellectual vision of Pope Benedict XVI. The Benedict XVI Center for Religion and Society held its official launch ceremony this past Thursday evening in the very room from which the Pope Emeritus delivered his address to religious leaders during the course of his historic official state visit to the UK in 2010. One of the architects of that visit was Her Majesty's Ambassador to the Holy See, Francis Campbell, who is now Vice Chancellor of St. Mary's. As an external affiliate of the new center, I attended the launch event for Vatican Radio, and I asked Vice Chancellor Campbell how the intellectual legacy of Professor Joseph Ratzinger, the man who became Pope Benedict XVI, informs and animates the university and the new center.
For two reasons. The very highlight of the visit for me was when Pope Benedict, on that Friday afternoon, stood in Westminster Hall on the very spot where St. Thomas More was condemned to death. And he spoke to the society in its breadth, but he spoke to a theme that he has addressed throughout his intellectual life, but a theme that has been addressed and tested throughout the history of Christianity. And that is the relationship between the individual and the state, the obligation to faith and the place of faith in the broader context of the state and society. And I was so conscious that he was speaking on what really was just a spot where that had been tested so much. But I had a side elevation of the Pope, a side view of him as he was speaking, and I was looking right across at every single living former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom who had turned out to hear his speech. I think it was the last time that Mrs. Thatcher was there with all the other former Prime Ministers. But that was very telling, that in a country that is not majority Catholic, that all the former Prime Ministers came to hear him speak in Westminster Hall on that theme. So for me, it was the content and it was the symbolism of what he was saying, and there was probably nobody more qualified to address the role of religion in society than Pope Benedict. And I think it goes down as one of the, certainly one of the top two speeches that he gave during his pontificate. So it's very appropriate for us to be building on that and to have a centre for the study of religion and society here at St. Mary's. In the particular case where the centre has been launched was the very spot where Benedict himself stood between the chief rabbi and Baroness Varsi, who was the first female Muslim member in the British cabinet, and he addressed the interfaith religious leaders of the country here at St. Mary's, again on the role of religion and society and their contribution. So it's apt that in the same venue, building on the visit from a little over 5 years ago, that we are now taking this next step to say, how do we basically continue this engagement, continue to explore the role of religion in society, using all the academic resources that a university can muster in an interdisciplinary fashion. And again, that is consistent with what Pope Benedict as Pope, or Joseph Ratzinger as cardinal, academic, bishop, etc., that everything that he did throughout his intellectual life is a constant analysis of religion's contribution to society. Finally, I would say one thing about his value and his contribution to this debate. A lot of academics, or sometimes faith leaders, when they look at this issue of the role of religion in society, can perhaps look to an earlier era when things were more simple or better. And what Cardinal Ratzinger, in his earlier publications and then as Pope Benedict, reminded us of, and is particularly apt here in the United Kingdom, was about the future of Western civilization and the role of Christianity in helping the renewal of that. And in that argument, he talked about the role of creative minorities. And the creative minority, for him, was Christianity, acting with it in an engaging way with civilization, with Western civilization, helping to renew it, helping to challenge it, helping to renew it from within. But the concept of creative minorities was not original to him. In fact, he's relying on a British thinker, which he acknowledges, he cites and he quotes, and it's Arnold Toynbee. And it's the famous debate in the early part of the 20th century between Spengler and Toynbee about whether Western civilization is following the path of every other civilization the world has known and simply will come to an end. And that's Spengler's view. But Toynbee comes at it and says, no, Western civilization is different. And it is different because of the role, the renewal role, and the potential of renewal that comes from Christianity, which sits at the heart of our civilization. And that's what Pope Benedict has been bringing out and reminding civilization, reminding faith groups of their contribution to Western civilization and to Western society. And that's quite a hopeful message for Western civilization to come across, regardless of whether, you know, one is Christian or of a different faith or indeed of no faith, but that there is a hope there of renewal within civilization and that creative minorities can help in that renewal.
All across the Western world, and any place where Western culture and Western civilization has penetrated and influenced, there seems to be a very, very public rethinking of the role of religion in public life and in society. Benedict XVI was, as you've said, quite clear and forceful and fearless even in addressing this subject. But he did not confine himself to speaking about religion in general. He believed that Christianity and Catholic Christianity specifically have a duty to be present in the public square. How do you think that message has been received? And if I could ask, put it this way, I'll do a twofold question. Maybe something of a progress report on the development of engagement.
It's a very, very good question, and it's I would share your analysis of what Pope Benedict XVI, what he approached, what he talked about, how he articulated it. But I think the context in which he was speaking here is quite particular, because you're dealing with a pluralist religious environment. You're not dealing with an evolution of the Enlightenment that marginalized religion in a hostile way from the public square. Religion still plays quite a significant and vital role in this society, and in particular Christianity. Now, somebody might say that British society has learned from its mistakes, and I think that is also valid. So the history of the Catholic Church post-Reformation in this country from the 19th century on is a history of re-establishing itself, of finding its voice in the public square. And today it has a voice. How is that voice articulated? In many ways, but if you could look at one in particular, the fact that around 10% of the British state school system is run by the Catholic Church. These are Catholic schools paid by taxpayers, often achieving very, very high academic results, but because of the values and ethos that these schools promote. Very popular schools, always a waiting list to get into, a fantastic contract between state and society, and the church leading the way. So that's the fertile ground that's here. It's not always an image that comes to mind when one thinks of Britain and faith. But you asked a question about what's the progress report. I would say the launch of tonight's centre is in some sense a progress report. I would say that the renaissance of a Catholic identity in this university is a progress report. But perhaps the biggest progress report that I would point to is the before and after of Pope Benedict's visit. Before, there were many people in Rome, and indeed in many other parts of the world, that were quite fearful about how the Pope would be received and how the papal visit would go down. And some of those fears went right to the wire, with some people thinking or believing that perhaps this was a mistake, that the Pope should come because of the likely hostile reception that the Holy Father would receive in Britain. But he didn't flinch from that. He actually, you know, intellectually engaged. And I would say that perhaps, you know, one of the possibly two or three main speeches of his pontificate were delivered in London. In particular, I would cite the speech at Westminster Hall. So the progress report that I would cite would be the reception that the Pope received on the streets of the United Kingdom. You know, to have 200,000 people lining the mall leading up to Buckingham Palace, to have 80,000 people in the middle of Hyde Park, in the centre of London, on a Saturday evening, praying in silence in front of the Blessed Sacrament. To see people lining in their thousands, you know, the streets of Edinburgh, or every single bridge between Edinburgh and Glasgow. And I think one of the legacies that he brought out was not just the content of what he said, but it was the imagery of the continuing centrality of faith and of its importance for ordinary people, especially young people, in their lives. And that was evident over those 4 days, blanket media coverage, and really dealing with some of the media who couldn't quite comprehend what they were seeing. Because the whole build-up in parts of the secular media was one of protest and discouragement, and some people had a narrative written. But from those first minutes in Edinburgh, it became clear that actually the people were presenting a very different story. There was an openness to religion, and there was a welcome. And the welcome wasn't just from the Catholic community. And it wasn't just from a British community. You know, it really was an international community, and London and Britain shone during those days. But it was also the way that the state rolled out a welcome. It was a state visit, the first state visit of a pope in the UK's history. And the fact that he went to Edinburgh first, which was only ever happened once before in a state visit, I think it was a king of Norway who went to Edinburgh. And the Pope went to Edinburgh because that's where the Queen was. She was in Scotland. And I think that mark of respect signalled from the very start the deep rapprochement that has taken place between the Holy See and the United Kingdom. So I think the legacy of that we are still building on. And I think having Pope Benedict coming back repeatedly, talking about the role and contribution of religion and the role and contribution of Christianity, and reminding British society of its own Christian roots and the contribution that Christianity has made and continues to make to this society, I think that was and will be an invaluable contribution.
Not only as a legacy of which to be proud rather than embarrassed, but as a resource upon which to draw. Now, the center itself is an interdisciplinary center. That's one of those buzzwords that we have around academia, and everyone uses it. But I'm not entirely sure that there is a settled or agreed upon definition of it. What does it mean here, and how does it connect to the deeper and the wider well of Catholic tradition.
My answer to you rests just behind your left shoulder, and it is a etching of Blessed John Henry Newman, the official etching, which is just above my door in the office, and it's the official etching from the Beatification. What we're about here, both in the centre and in the university, is for the first time trying to realise Newman's vision in a Catholic university context in this country. This was his home. England was his home. And yet, there's never been a serious attempt to basically take that idea of the university and to implement it. And one of the features of Newman's approach is that interdisciplinary approach. It is that breadth. It is that communication between various disciplines, whether it be in the arts and humanities or in the social sciences. So in this centre, if one looks, some of the issues that the centre is tackling around secularisation, around the falling off in attendance, around what is a Catholic culture, around evangelisation and what it means in identity, it's to approach some of these social issues that present themselves to our contemporary society, but to approach them through sociology, through theology, through law, through economics, through politics, through a wide array of the social sciences lenses that are open to you in a university setting. So that's what we would mean by the interdisciplinary approach. It's not just that it's often the best way to tackle a problem, because there will be no particular discipline that will give you an exclusive insight into what you are facing. It will require a multidisciplinary approach. But equally, why? Why is because of what Newman is talking about, the sources of knowledge and the breadth of knowledge that a university must do in order to be actually educating people. And again, something of the tendency that's there at the moment in a lot of Western universities is to be retreating into subject specialisms and silos, where one academic silo doesn't talk to another academic silo, and it becomes ever so particular, and we lose something of that interdisciplinary narrative.
Conceived then as a major international hub for engagement across disciplines in the area of religion and the social sciences, the center is already engaged in significant research. In cooperation with University College London, Queen's University Belfast, and Coventry University, and with the support of the John Templeton Foundation, the Benedict XVI Center is embarked on a project exploring scientific study of non-religious belief, which is scheduled to conclude in December of this year. Also in the works are a major international conference offering a critical appraisal of the encyclical letter Humanae Vitae of Blessed Paul VI on the 50th anniversary of its promulgation, a series of seminars led by eminent economist and St. Mary's professor Philip Booth on Catholic social teaching, policy, and society, and several specific initiatives of the Center's Catholic Research Forum, which aims to put research and strategic thinking that is both academically rigorous and pastorally useful at the service of the Catholic Church. I'm Chris Altieri.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.